I'm Captain Kevin Smith, and this is Throttle Up, a radio show and podcast dedicated to the proposition that critical thinking, when employed, can dramatically improve performance in whatever we are doing, enable us to solve problems that others avoid, equip us to become thought leaders instead of followers, and provide us with the intellectual resources and moral courage to support and defend America and its Constitution. Our motto is clarify, reason, win. That is, clarify the actual, employ analytic reason, and achieve mission success. Our website, throttleupradio.com, that has all kinds of information. Also, our podcast is located there, as well as iTunes. And of course, we have a blog, so please visit our website. Our support staff, Evergroove Studios for audio engineering services. They are located in Evergreen, Colorado, and Reflections Printing for multimedia support, and they are located in St. George, Utah. Our book is Critical Thinking Essentials, Quick Reference Handbook. It is available from Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and other outlets. Our broadcast time on Red State Talk Radio, we are on the weekends, both Saturday and Sunday, on the main channel, that's at 7 p.m., and the Encore channel, that's at 6 p.m. Okay, welcome back to Throttle Up after our regular introduction. So, what we're doing is we are in the midst of a special edition, we run these special editions from time to time. The purpose is to focus on certain things that we think are important, certain things about critical thinking in the broad context of things. How should we think about it? How should we consider things that might improve our ability to think clearly, to think, you could say, think properly, think productively, think efficiently. In other words, how do we go about the task of thinking? How should we think about things? And what are the, I'd say the, what are the considerations about thinking? What should we consider? Is thinking a spontaneous human operation, or is it actually not, or does it lend itself to some kind of organizing structure? Does it lend itself to optimization? Does it lend itself to efficiency and effectiveness? And, you know, we could go on. Does it lend itself to being agile and adaptive? Does it lend itself to robustness? Does it lend itself to resilience? In other words, what is it about critical thinking that all of us ought to know about? What is it about critical thinking that that can be useful to us in our daily lives. Now, the whole purpose of Throttle Up Radio and Throttle Up Podcast is to help us understand how can we apply critical thinking in our daily lives as we go about our day-to-day business of whatever we have chosen to do or whatever we are doing, whether we are employed, whether we are self-employed, whether we are an entrepreneur, whether we are a retiree pursuing a new path of interest and a new path of existence. It really doesn't matter what we're doing. I guess the first thing that comes to my mind is, should we consider such things that might help us think better? And if the answer to that is yes, probably so, or most likely, then how should we consider these things? In what form or fashion should we consider? How do we go about thinking better, more effectively, with less confusion? I guess one of the things that I have considered in my life, in the work that I have done, is often we enter into a problem space in which confusion prevails. That could be due to any number of things. It could be due to the circumstances that we have found ourselves in. It could be due to the environment. It could be due to all kinds of features within the problem space. It could be lack of clarity across the board. We often, encounter those kinds of things. And it could be in our daily lives. It could be in our professional lives. It could be any place where confusion prevails. We're kind of confused. We're not exactly sure what to think, and we're not certainly not sure of how we should go about thinking about something like this that we have encountered. And often what we do is that we take what we think is a convenient shortcut. So in other words, we don't stay on the trail. We take a shortcut. Let's assume that we, as a metaphor, let's assume we're on a switchback trail, and we decide not to stay on the trail, which is designed to minimize the slope, but we're going to take a shortcut. We're going to cut across the switchback. That could be, on face value, a convenient shortcut. Certainly cuts down on the distance, but it might bring up other considerations that are not immediately apparent. So one of our, as a group of beings that think, one of our so-called convenient shortcuts is to jump to conclusions. We have something occurring, and then we try to immediately, we don't try to, we are convinced that we have a solution. We then jump immediately from what we think is happening to some kind of a response to the happening, a response to the occurrence, a response to the event. And often our immediate reaction here, which tends to be knee-jerk reaction, And it's entirely ad hoc. It's just a spur of the moment kind of response. And, you know, and I'm not saying that humans shouldn't do that. Certainly we have that built-in mechanism. It's part of our survival mechanism. But I think it has to be tempered. It has to be tempered with experience. It has to be tempered with intelligence. It has to be tempered with comprehension. And often our convenient shortcut to the solution turns out to be that we have, in fact, identified something that appears to be an effective response to an occurrence or an event, but as it turns out, it's not. It actually, and here's the thing, you know, it actually would likely make matters worse. And so that's one of the things that I'm, you know, particularly concerned about is our tendency to jump to conclusions. In Kahneman's book, Thinking Fast and Thinking Slow, he spends a great deal of time talking about fast thinking and slow thinking, and he talks about it in terms of different systems that we activate, and so forth and so on. It's kind of a dense book, and as it turned out, it was a bestseller. Do I recommend it? Oh, sure. Sure. It ought to be part of our libraries. I think that a more effective way to access that would be to read a summary. There are some books that summarize that particular book, and they do a particularly good job of it. And so I would also recommend that. Anyway, so Thinking Fast, Thinking Slow, Kahneman's theory of how humans think is particularly good. But going forward with that and considering how we should go about the process of thinking, and why we should consider such things in the first place is one of my themes, if you will, or one of my major themes, or one of my purposes of doing this radio show, and in particular doing not only this special series, but also all the other special series that we have done, as well as all the other shows. Now, this series, I kind of wandered off a little bit of the point, but I think it was some good stuff. But this series is called Big Picture Thinking, and this is, I believe it's episode number 6 in the Big Picture Thinking series. So what has that got to do with critical thinking? And I mentioned this before, and I guess it bears repeating. Well, the short answer is it has everything to do with critical thinking. Critical thinking encourages us to do a couple of things, to think outside the box, think in terms of what does it mean holistically, or whatever we are doing affect the whole, and it encourages us to look at the wholeness of things, because whatever we do in a piecewise fashion will, in fact, have an impact on the whole, and we kind of need to know what that impact is. We can't just go off willy-nilly and do something at the component level or tweak this or modify that without considering its overall impact. What is the overall impact of what we're trying to do? And this is across the board. And this is one of our great challenges as humans that are in a position in which thinking is important. And that would be humans that are living in a free culture, free society, free market enterprise systems and stuff like that. It requires us, the freedom, of course, is a blessing. It's also a challenge. It requires us to be able to think well, to think clearly, to think appropriately. And so whenever we are faced with something that gives us pause or something that has captured our attention, we should recognize the fact that we are in a very nice position here because we are free to consider things, and it also brings about our responsibility to we have a responsibility to contribute positively to human existence as we are experiencing it, and to utilize our brains, utilize our mind, utilize our intellect to help us do the right thing, to help us be productive and effective and efficient and all the above. All right. So why are we looking at big picture thinking? Because big picture thinking goes hand in glove with critical thinking. You might say, in effect, that big picture thinking, if we put that at the top of the page, big picture thinking embraces critical thinking, systems thinking. Those are the two big ones. We could go on from that, strategic thinking, innovation thinking, design thinking. Sure, it embraces all of those too. But I would say that if you wanted to, just keep it simple, and not get overly complicated or make it easy for us and for others to understand, what is big picture thinking? Big picture thinking is critical thinking taken to a point in which we are capable of thinking outside the box. So critical thinking encourages us to think outside the box. It doesn't mandate it. It encourages us to think outside the box. Big picture thinking requires us, if in fact we are going to be big picture thinkers, big picture thinking pretty much requires us to consider the wholeness of things. Okay, that is by definition the big picture. The big picture is the complete entity. It is the whole thing. It is the whole enchilada. It is the whole structure, not the not a piece of the structure, but it is the whole structure. So big picture thinking requires us to consider the wholeness of things, and whatever we are doing, we are looking at it with respect to how does it impact the big thing, the big picture, the big system, or the big mechanism. How does it do that? Okay, so definition, of course, we talked about this before. What is big picture thinking? Big picture thinking could be described as that which considers the wholeness of things, overarching attributes, and the mission, operation, or the intended purpose of this thing that we are looking at, or ourselves within the thing. All right, so we could you know, look at it both ways. Quantum theory not only looks at the thing, but looks at the observer as well. So remember that that we are not an innocent bystander with respect to reality. We are part of the reality structure. So keep that in mind also, and that's all part of this idea of big picture thinking. All right, so the wholeness of things, what does that mean? It means to look at the whole system, the whole mechanism, the whole structure, the complete picture. Big picture thinking considers the wholeness of things. Overarching attributes, what does that mean? Overarching attributes are particularly important. And that basically means that we need to look at those attributes that overarch that embrace the whole thing, the complete system, if you will. An overarching attribute. What's a good example of an overarching attribute? My favorite example is that if the system is going to endure, endurance, if you could say the endurance is an overarching attribute, I would say, okay, yeah, that's fine. But how does it do that? If the system is going to endure, if the system is going to persevere, if the system is going to sustain itself, it has to be adaptive. It has to be, in a little bit broader context, it has to be agile and adaptive. So a key overarching attribute for any viable system, it has to be able to adapt to changing operational conditions. It just has to be that way. Otherwise, it will eventually cease to exist. It will go on by the way of the dinosaurs. It will eventually cease to exist. It will become extinct. So now, some systems do. They become extinct. Some systems do. And that's part of the natural world. And there's all kinds of things that we can say about that. But so that would be a key overarching attribute, which is it has to be agile and adaptive. Now, agile and adaptive means that the system is capable of responding to events. So it's a event response. It has event response capability. I guess that's a better way of saying it. So if, in fact, it can respond to events, and it can respond to events in a timely fashion, often another term that's used is real time. That basically means the same thing. Then it is robust. Okay, so robustness is also an overarching attribute, or it is a result of agility and adaptability. So those are the key things that those are examples. There's lots of overarching attributes that we could consider, and you know, and probably we should do that. Okay, and so you say, okay, Kevin, aren't you getting a little bit, you know, a little bit down in the weeds here, or what has this got to do with my life? What has this got to do with what I am doing today? What has this got to do with earning a living? What has this got to do with supporting my family and all of the above? And my response to those questions would be, it has everything to do with it. Because what are we doing anyway? Okay. What are we doing? We have, we are an individual. We are a member of some family. It could be an extended, certainly an extended family. We are likely a member of some organization. I am retired military, and so I am part of the military organization, if you will. And so we are, and also I'm a member of the pilot community, the naval aviation community, and so forth and so on. So we are members of organizations, and the organizations are there to do something. And what are they supposed to do? And you know, and you can try to get pragmatic and limit yourself and just say, well, my organization's in the business of making money, or my organization's in the business of protecting the country against aggression. Okay, fine. You know, I would say that your organization, if you are in fact in an enterprise conducting some kind of business, I would suggest an alternative viewpoint. I would say that the enterprises that you are in or that you know about or that you work for or whatever enterprises are in the business of providing something that will satisfy a customer. So you're in the business of providing customer satisfaction. I would go on to say that, and one of the things that we have also pointed out in this show, and I have pointed out in some of my other endeavors, is striving for total customer satisfaction. What exactly are we trying to do? We are trying to achieve total customer satisfaction. That's what we're trying to do. You can say, well, isn't that the same thing as making money or making a profit or stuff like that? And I would say that you cannot make money and you cannot achieve profit or maintain a profitable economic environment if you are not providing total customer satisfaction. And so that ought to be front and center. Now here you're talking about when you embrace total customer satisfaction, here you're talking about the big picture. All right. Now, you can say, well, that's all fancy words, but it doesn't mean anything. And I would go on to point out that's kind of limiting one's viewpoint. I would say that idea is fundamentally flawed. I would say that respectfully, of course, but it is fundamentally flawed. And one of the big buzzwords today, and one of the things that is going on across all businesses, by the way, and in many military organizations, is this push for total customer satisfaction, employing what is often called design thinking. Another term that's being used for some of the smaller applications or limited applications is user experience, but it basically means the same thing. All right, so total customer satisfaction embraces or is something that could be realized through the process of design thinking. Now, what is design thinking? Again, we should probably do a series on that. I kind of think that we will after this series is over. So what is that all about? Design thinking is the encouragement of all design teams. It could be the project teams or whatever. There's lots and lots of projects in a corporation's pipeline. Or an enterprise's pipeline and I'm talking, primarily medium and large scale businesses, medium, large-scale enterprises, but not necessarily so. I mean, it could be small businesses as well. But there's lots of projects going on, right? There's lots of projects in the pipeline. What are they are trying to do? They're trying to capture the or satisfy the needs of the customer. They're trying to address themselves to customer desires. They're trying to deliver total customer satisfaction. It could be that you have a fairly large-scale project already out there in the marketplace, but you want to improve it, upgrade it, bring it up to speed, make it easier to use, make it more effective, make it less costly, whatever you're trying to do. There may be a number of projects that you have in the pipeline. And so a total customer satisfaction is for all project and portfolio managers. So if you are, in fact, a project manager or a portfolio manager, which is that you have a number of projects that you're responsible for, then design thinking and total customer satisfaction is key. Design thinking opens up the conceptual space. Design thinking often encourages one to think outside the box, as well as to put on the big picture thinking thinking cap, if you will, or to consider the big picture. So big picture orientation is pretty much the same in my mind as big picture thinking. So big picture orientation, big picture thinking is kind of like one and the same. And what is that trying to do? It is trying to come to grips with a couple of things. Number one is that we live in a very complex world. A modern industrial society is, in fact, complex because there's many, many moving parts. There's lots of players, there's lots of agents. Anytime you have three or more players, then you have that are interacting with one another in some form or fashion, then you have something that is, by definition, complex. Okay, we're back. Now, as we consider such things with respect to big picture thinking, as we consider such things as overarching attributes, what is the key or overarching attribute? We talked about this. It has to do with robustness, which is that we want this system to preserve or we want it to endure. And in order for it to endure, it has to be adaptive. That's pretty much a given. And because that's so important, there's a whole body of knowledge that has grown up around that that is often called or referred to as a complex adaptive system. Complex adaptive systems are all around us in the natural world. Humans are now being challenged to create them, to build such systems that we would consider to be human-machine hybrid systems. How are we doing so far in actually building robust systems that are adaptive, that are by definition complex? We're not particularly doing particularly good at it. We're not good at it right now. Hopefully, we will get better in the future. But there is a body of knowledge that has grown up around this area, if you will, this component, if you will, or a major part of big picture thinking is, in fact, is the system. What is the overarching attributes for that we need to consider ourselves with respect to big picture thinking? And that is robustness or it's the ability to adapt. So the adaptability, or I call it agility and adaptability, those are the two major, not exclusively, but those are the two major overarching attributes that we ought to all consider. We're trying to deal with such a thing. And let's say that we are now part of the design team that is addressing itself to urban air mobility. This is a great example that I keep using all the time. Urban air mobility is, in fact, going to be a big picture thing. Okay. It's a large scale dynamic system, and it needs to be adaptive. So it needs to be robust and it needs to be adaptive. So it is, in fact, going to be a complex adaptive system. If it is not a complex adaptive system, it will not survive. It will not endure. It has to be able to adapt itself to changing operational conditions. Okay, fine. So what is a complex adaptive system? Now, I have a short audio clip here. This is from a source that I use that's pretty good. It's actually a pretty good source. I would recommend it. It's called, it comes from the Systems Innovation Channel that you can locate on YouTube. Again, that's Systems Innovation. They have a particularly good set of audios and videos that you can listen to. It's primarily listening, if you wish. You can listen to these things on your cell phone or wherever you are. And it's a good, these are good short sessions, if you will, that deal with various aspects of systems thinking. And this one is particularly good. Now, this is an introduction to complex adaptive systems, and so we're going to play this audio clip. It's a short one, but it gives us a pretty good idea of what we are trying to address ourselves to. Here we go.
Complex adaptive systems are all around us, from financial markets to ecosystems to the human immune system and even civilization itself. They consist of many agents that are acting and reacting to each other's behavior. Out of this often chaotic set of interactions emerges global patterns of organization in a dynamic world of constant change and evolution where nothing is fixed. In these complex adaptive systems, no one is in control. No one has complete information. Patterns of order emerge through self-organization between agents. Individual cells self-organize to form differentiated body organs, ants interact and self-organize to form colonies, and people interact to form social networks. These patterns of global organization emerge out of a dynamic between order and chaos that we are only just beginning to understand. But as we do, we are finding that these apparently very dissimilar systems share fundamental commonalities. The aim of this course is to give a comprehensive, clear, and accessible outline to the new area of complex adaptive systems that is finding application in many areas. We will be covering all the main topics within this domain, as we start by talking about adaptation itself, where we will be discussing cybernetics and looking at how systems regulate themselves to respond to change. We'll go on to talk about the dynamics of cooperation and competition, looking at how and why agents work together to create local patterns of organization. Next, we will be talking about the process of self-organization and asking the big questions about how do we get and sustain ordered patterns out of randomness and chaos. Lastly, we will be looking at the process of evolution as a powerful and relentless force that shapes complex adaptive systems on the macro scale, and we will be taking it apart to get a solid grasp of its basic functioning. This course requires no prior specific knowledge of mathematics or science. It is designed as an introduction, presenting concepts in a non-mathematical and intuitive form that should be accessible to anyone with an interest in the subject.
And now we will press on to complexity theory. This is another great introduction as we continue to consider how we should employ big picture thinking. Here we go.
In this video, we will be giving an overview to the area of complexity theory by looking at the major theoretical frameworks that are considered to form part of it and contribute to the study of complex systems. Complexity theory is a set of theoretical frameworks used for modeling and analyzing complex systems within a variety of domains. Complexity has proven to be a fundamental feature of our universe that is not amenable to our traditional methods of modern science. And thus, as researchers have encountered it within many different areas from computer science to ecology to engineering, they have had to develop new sets of models and methods for approaching it. Out of these different frameworks has emerged a core set of commonalities that over the past few decades has come to be recognized as a generic framework for studying complex systems in the abstract. Complexity theory encompasses a very broad and very diverse set of models and methods. As yet, there is no proper formulation to structure and give definition to this framework. Thus, we will present it as a composite of our four main areas that encompass the different major perspectives on complex systems and how to best interpret them, including self-organization theory, nonlinear systems, network theory, and adaptive systems theory. Firstly, self-organization and emergence. Complex systems are composed of many small parts without centralized control, examples being flocks of birds, financial markets, social networks, global logistics networks, or the human brain. Without centralized control, global organization is an emergent feature of the local interactions between the parts. Whereas the term emergence is a general concept referring to how new levels of organization are formed as we put component parts together, the theory of self-organization presents a number of concrete models for understanding how this process takes place. The model of self-organization draws upon information theory to understand organization in terms of information and entropy. It draws upon ideas in physics surrounding synchronization and pattern formation, and ideas in chemistry surrounding dissipative systems and far-from-equilibrium processes. Here we are looking at how elements governed by simple rules synchronize their behavior, with the result being a process of self-organization as patterns of organization emerge from the bottom up. Researchers try to model complex systems by capturing these local rules and using computational tools like agent-based modeling to try and simulate the process through which order emerges out of initially homogeneous or disordered states. Next, nonlinear systems and chaos theory. Nonlinearity is an inherent feature and major theme that crosses all areas of complex systems. A lot of nonlinear systems theory has its origins in quite dense and obscure mathematics and physics. Out of the study of certain types of equations, weather patterns, fluid dynamics, and particular chemical reactions has emerged some very counterintuitive phenomena in the form of the butterfly effect and chaos. Chaos theory, which is the study of nonlinear dynamical systems, was one of the first major challenges to the Newtonian paradigm that was accepted into the mainstream body of scientific knowledge. Our modern scientific framework is based upon linear systems theory, and this places significant constraints upon it. Linear systems theory is dependent upon the concept of a system having an equilibrium. Although linear systems theory often works as an approximation, the fact is that many of the phenomena we are interested in describing are nonlinear. Processes of change, such as regime shifts within ecosystems and society, happen far from equilibrium. They are governed by the dynamics of feedback loops and not linear equations. Trying to model complex systems by using traditional linear systems theory is like trying to put a screw into a piece of wood with a hammer. We are simply using the wrong tool because it is the only one we have. Thus, the areas of nonlinear systems and their dynamics is another major part of the framework of complexity theory that has come largely from physics, mathematics, and the study of far-from-equilibrium processes in chemistry. Next, network theory. Network theory is another major area to complexity theory, as almost all complex systems can be understood and modeled effectively as networks. Network theory is a formal mathematical language, but it has proven a very practical tool for analysis and thus has found widespread application in many areas. The study of networks is probably the youngest and most active area of complexity science, again driven by the rise of computation and the fundamental role that networks are starting to play in our world with the advent of information technology. With the theory of networks and the availability of new sources of data, we are starting to get a real picture to what some of these complex systems that make up our world actually look like. We can start to see the connections within financial systems through which contagion spreads, the real-time movement of freight around the globe, or socio-political networks that influence our lives. This is a new kind of science, driven less by models and equations, but more by real-time, dense data sets. This means we are no longer left staring at models, but now have accessible visualizations to give us a much more rich, intuitive, and in many ways, real sense for what exactly these complex systems are like. The main contributions to this area have come from the area of mathematics called graph theory, and again, computer science. The last major area to complexity theory that we will discuss is that of complex adaptive systems. Complex adaptive systems are classical examples of complex systems, and people often use the two words somewhat interchangeably. They consist of many parts acting and reacting to each other's behavior, like a school of fish swimming together, nation-states within the international political environment, or businesses in a market. They are highly dynamic and develop through an evolutionary-like process. The central issue is that of the process of adaptation and evolution. The idea of adaptation formed a central part of cybernetics that contributed ideas surrounding control systems and how systems regulate themselves and their environment in order to maintain homeostasis. A key issue here is that of the dynamics surrounding cooperation and competition that form as adaptive agents interact and try to pursue their goals collectively. One could also include game theory here, a branch of mathematics for modeling the interaction between adaptive agents of all kinds and the dynamics of cooperation and competition that form out of this. When the idea of adaptation is generalized to a whole population of agents and takes place over a series of life cycles, it can be termed evolution. And the theory of evolution is one of the major contributions that ecology has made to complexity theory. We now have a number of different models for understanding evolution, including evolutionary game theory, replicator equations, fitness landscapes, and genetic algorithms, among others. This is an area that has grown out of cybernetics, computer science, economics, and ecology. Lastly, we'll discuss a little of the context and significance of the area of complexity theory as it plays a somewhat unique role within the framework of contemporary science. The website Scholarpedia describes complexity theory as an emerging post-Newtonian paradigm. There is a lot packed into this short statement, so let's try and unravel and make sense of it. The Newtonian framework is based on linear systems theory. This has been a powerful tool for helping us understand the world. Through the contributions of millions of researchers over the course of centuries, we have built up a large and sophisticated body of scientific knowledge, which is one of humanity's greatest achievements. Throughout the 20th century, though, the Newtonian paradigm and linear systems theory have become increasingly called into question as general relativity and then chaos theory proved some of its most basic assumptions to be, in fact, flawed. The fact is that much of the phenomena that we are really interested in are inherently nonlinear, such as almost all socio-political, ecological, and economic phenomena. A core challenge of 21st century science, then, is to extend this framework into the world of nonlinear systems and complexity, and this means going beyond the Newtonian framework. As Scholarpedia puts it, developing a post-Newtonian paradigm, and this is exactly what complexity theory is doing. To summarize, we have been giving a quick overview to the area of complexity theory, which we defined as a set of theoretical frameworks used for modeling complex systems within a variety of domains. We looked at four of the major modeling frameworks that fall under its canopy. We firstly talked about self-organization and how it gives us the tools to understand the process of emergence where global patterns form out of only local interactions. We talked about the theory of nonlinear systems and how it has emerged out of the study of chaotic physical and chemical processes, We then discussed network theory as another major domain that understands complex systems in terms of connectivity and how things flow through these systems. The last major area we looked at was the theory of adaptive systems that tries to understand complex adaptive systems in terms of the interaction between adaptive agents, cooperation and competition, and the dynamics of evolution. Finally, we tried to provide some insight into the significance and context of complexity theory as a so-called post-Newtonian paradigm as it tries to extend our scientific body of knowledge into the world of nonlinear systems.
Okay, in summary, let's take a look at what we're trying to do here. All right, so when we have this this thing which we call big picture thinking. Big picture thinking encourages us to consider the wholeness of things and their overarching attributes of this entity that we are considering. The entity could be located in one place or could be located in many places. It really doesn't matter. But we have something that we are looking at. We could call it an entity. Sometimes we could use the term object, but I prefer to use the term entity. What are the overarching attributes? We looked at adaptability, of course, and agility, which are contained within the concept of robustness. But also, we need to consider, and this is probably at the top of the list, are we dealing with something that is complex? And if we are dealing with something that is complex, we need to know that. And I guess, you know, I guess my point is this, all right? And we go about our daily lives, we go about doing business, engaging in some kind of a purposeful activity, and we encounter things along the way. If we encounter something, do we consider it first and foremost literally, or do we step back and think of it conceptually? And I would suggest that we think about it conceptually, we step back and ask ourselves a couple of things. The first thing that I ask myself is, whatever we are dealing with, is it in fact complex as contained within the formal definition of complexity? Is it complex? If it is complex, that completely changes everything. It can changes everything about the picture. It changes everything about our response to it, and it changes everything about whatever response or whatever solution we come up with has to be consistent with the fact that whatever we are dealing with is, in fact, complex. And so that is the whole point of this series that we were talking about here in this particular episode, but this series called Big Picture Thinking. Big picture thinking embraces the wholeness of things and their overarching attributes, and probably the key overarching attribute of anything that we are considering with respect to big picture thinking is whether or not it is complex. If it is complex, we need to know that, and we need to address ourselves to that reality. Well, that went fast. So this is a close of another show, another Throttle Up. And before I go, I would like to acknowledge a few people. I'd like to thank my listening audience for being here. And I would like to thank Red State Talk Radio for providing us an opportunity for each and every weekend to put on this radio show that we call Throttle Up. And I would like to thank all of you veterans out there. Thank you for your service. And I would like to thank the families of the veterans. Thank you for supporting this noble cause. And I would like to thank all of you on active duty in the Guard and Reserve. Thank you for serving this great country of ours. And with that, I would like to say goodbye, and we will see you all again next week.